So we get, you know, not so great skin, not so great hair as we age, but also eyes. So I think a high antioxidant regime to help neutralize those free radicals is a really important anti-aging, you know, regime. And I think chaga is just the best. It just has the highest amount of antioxidants and a very, very, very large range of different antioxidant compounds in it.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, and thank you for joining. This show gives you updated knowledge and tools for better well-being, brain health, mental performance, and longevity. You know, I understand your time is valuable, so the goal is to pack these episodes with the latest in science, interesting and inspiring ideas, and actionable tools with my expert guests. If you want to stay updated on new episodes, subscribe to YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcast, and sign up to my newsletter, incoland.co/newsletter. I think everyone needs a fungi in their life, and I'm not talking about a hilarious male friend, but medicinal mushrooms like chaga, reishi, lion's mane, and other fungi that have been shown to enhance health in various ways. In this episode, you'll get a deep dive into the world of medicinal mushrooms and how to choose a proper mushroom for yourself to support sleep, gut microbiome, immunity, and mood. I am joined by Erik Puro, who is the co-founder of GABA, a Nordic company specializing in high-quality mushroom extracts and scientific research in medicinal mushrooms. He is also a member of the executive committee of the International Medicinal Mushroom Society. GABA does not only sell mushrooms and investigate their biological qualities in their laboratories, but they also grow the mushrooms themselves and has a subdivision, GABA Forest, that promotes the versatile use of forests and manages the largest chaga cultivation network in the world. In this episode, we cover the difference between a culinary fungi and a medicinal fungi. We cover how shiitake and chaga combat inflammation and support immunity, how lion's mane help to grow the brain, how reishi can enhance gut microbiome and sleep quality, how chaga is grown in GABA Forest. We discuss powder versus tincture form when using medicinal mushrooms, and we discuss our personal experiences with mushrooms. So it's super interesting discussion. It's all about mushrooms, and I myself also learned so much during this episode. Also, I just wanted to let you know that I was a little bit sick during this episode, and you can definitely hear that in my voice. So my voice is a little bit weird, so sorry about that. I hope it doesn't bother too much. Anyway, let me know your experiences with medicinal mushrooms in the comments. Like, what kind of medicinal mushrooms have you tried? And, for example, have you seen weird dreams after using reishi? Just a thing that I've noticed. Enjoy the episode.
Erik, thank you so much for giving me the privilege to ask you a few questions today about medicinal mushrooms.
Anytime. Happy to be here, and thanks for the invite.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your background and what made you become so knowledgeable and expert in medicinal mushrooms, because you didn't only base the company GABA Health, but you also, I've chatted with you several times, and you know so much about the nitty-gritty details of the biology of the mushrooms and the neurobiology behind how they affect and the immune system gut. And how did you gain all this knowledge? What made you so interested?
Yeah, my background. So I studied business, actually, in a business school in the US, the Kelly School of University there. And I was also doing corporate consulting then after business school in Chicago with a company called KPMG. So I was helping very large companies make more money. And it was very interesting. I was very early 20s. It was flying around the world, you know. It was kind of nice, but it wasn't feeding my soul. I wasn't getting any real satisfaction from that work. So I kind of went on this journey, maybe about 8 years, 10 years, something like that, of really finding what I wanted to see more in the world, what my ethics were, what else was out there other than just the state of Indiana, where I grew up. And, just what the whole world looked like and new experiences. And I started a few companies, started a few nonprofits, had a few small jobs, hitchhiked around Europe for a few years. I did a lot of lecturing, a lot of talking. I met a lot of people. And I came to realize that actually what I really love is biotech. I love biotech. And biotech to me, so I'm an entrepreneur in my soul. Like I love solving problems. I see the opportunity in everything. No matter what it looks like, I can see past whatever. I'm always looking 5 years ahead, always. And so I love solving problems massively. I really, really enjoy that. Almost addicted to it somehow. And as a methodology to solve problems, biotech to me is the most interesting. So I would so much rather look to nature for the answers for problems than look to our own minds or our own laboratories or something that we develop. And that's sort of, to me, what biotech really at its fundamental level is looking to nature for those answers. So I'm not a technical person. So I don't have a microbiology background. I don't have a science background at all. Business administration is basically my background. But when I moved to Finland about 5.5 years ago, I started really networking with people here, started going to different sort of accelerator groups or networking groups, learning who's doing what and in the biotech field and what is kind of going on there. And I found one of my co-founders at one of these myco meetups in Helsinki and just basically kept talking to me about all the potential that mushrooms can do, all the problems that mushrooms can solve. And of course, I'm just loving that, you know, that they can do this and they can do that and they can do this. And medicinal mushrooms, there's not a whole lot of good companies in the market and people are talking about it very strange and there's a lot of misinformation. And, you know, look what's happening in the US market. And, you know, I started to do a market analysis and realized there's not a lot of companies that I really like in that space and that there could be space for one more, you know. And that would be a good life mission to really pursue and really see what fungi can really bring us in terms of ecosystem health and human health. And so that's how we started the company. And that's kind of my background. So now that I've kind of committed on this path of fungi and especially medicinal fungi, now I've been really getting involved in everywhere that I can. So I stick my nose in every scientific paper that comes out almost. I'm on the, I was awarded very, yeah, thankfully to the executive committee of the International Medicinal Mushroom Society. And that's a great honor to be part of that, as that's where all the researchers that are doing research in medicinal mushroom space are publishing their papers, are doing presentations at the Congress. So we're getting really good access as a company to those, to that research that comes out. And just for your listeners and for you also, Inka, the International Medicinal Mushroom Congress 11 is going to be happening this year in Serbia, in the EU. So it'll be very, yeah. So if you're interested, you should meet some other mushroom nerds. It's a great place to go. I mean, it's just the most up-to-date latest scientific research about medicinal compounds and how they're interacting in the body in different plenary sessions. So basically the researchers are just presenting, you know, papers that they've done. It's really heady, but then there's also really great dinners and stuff too. So it's a nice social networking event as well. But it's a lot of fun. We're going to be going there with a lot of people from the company. But we also, the last thing I want to say is that we also have a lead research analyst in the company. His name's Peter Petros, and he's actually probably one of the most knowledgeable people in the world about medicinal mushroom compounds, to be honest, at this point. So where I don't have a technical background, he really does. He comes from that research space, so he's able to read those papers, digest them, and for, you know, stupid person like me, help me really understand what they're doing. And then we can then implement that into how we grow the mushrooms or how we process those mushrooms or how we package them or just how that works internally.
That's awesome. That's like, it sounds like that you have a like very good synergy and a very good team there to actually bring out the best in the products, best in medicinal fungi. And we're going to talk about a little bit about the quality of what makes a quality product and what makes basically your products like very good bioavailable source of these compounds of benefit in medicinal fungi and everything. But first of all, maybe can you give us a little bit of explanation of what is actually medicinal fungi? How is that different from just a normal mushroom that we see in the nature and go pick up and eat with our salads or culinary fungi? What is it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Because I think we really like to put things in boxes. so we want to really have a clear separation between culinary fungi, maybe wild fungi, medicinal fungi. Whereas nature's not like that. nature doesn't compartmentalize so much. This reductionism is really not exactly the case many times. So
for instance, nature shiitake, doesn't go like, oh, I'll just grow a culinary fungi now.
I'll be culinary fungi. Yeah, no, it doesn't work like that. I think it's more messy, you know, and just a quick tangent about that. I mean, I think it's everything that we're learning, especially in the mycorrhizal fungi science, or, you know, it's really messy. They change like a biology, they change living strategy. It's really fantastic. And I think biotech and as a space in general, the companies and the researchers who will succeed in that are ones that want to look at a more holistic approach. How does that whole ecosystem interact with each other? That's going to be a really big, really big thing in the next coming decade. But back to the culinary and medicinal side. So for instance, there's a mushroom called shiitake that we're probably all familiar with. So shiitake is a culinary mushroom. You know, you can eat it at restaurants, you can buy it in the grocery store. Yeah, but it's also a medicinal mushroom. So does cooking it basically, you know, does eating it culinarily, does that give you medicinal benefits? And the answer is kind of, a little bit. So I think that, you know, basically, you know, mushrooms are more related to human beings than plants, right? So we have a lot more DNA similar with mushrooms. We have a much more similar immune system with mushrooms than we do with plants. But a majority of a lot of the herbal supplements that we have or food supplements are from plant-derived sources. And I think that there's just more of a history around that. It's easier, actually, to get those medicinal compounds from plants. They're more bioavailable. With mushrooms, they're very complex. You know, frying some shiitake in a pan and eating that, maybe those beta-glucan compounds or L-ergothiorine compounds in there, maybe they're only 5% bioavailable. So they go, basically, just go right through your body. So you're not getting that medicinal benefit. So it's a medicinal mushroom without a medicinal benefit, basically, if you eat it culinarily. So what really, when we're talking about our company with medicinal mushrooms, we're talking about, you know, mushrooms that have medicinal compounds that we of course standardize, we research those things, and that our company then goes into extracting that and making sure that those compounds then are bioavailable. And many, that's what many companies are doing when they're looking at medicinal mushrooms.
That's a very great explanation and very clear as well. So what are some of the compounds in these medicinal mushrooms that are linked to the health benefits?
Yeah. How much time do we have?
Some key main ones.
The main ones, yeah. So I think the most well-known and researched and studied compound in mushrooms, in especially medicinal mushrooms, is beta-glucans. And beta-glucans are a compound that helps create kind of the cell wall structure of the mushroom itself. So they're very prevalent probably in almost every mushroom that you find to some degree, right? So when we talk about medicinal mushrooms, like maitake, I think has the highest amount that we've been able to standardize of beta-glucans. Some are just really high in beta-glucans. But beta-glucans there's beta-glucans also in yeast. There's also beta-glucans in oats. But the beta-glucans from fungi specifically have a specific branching pattern called 1-3-1-6. And if you look it up, you can see exactly how those ends branch off. So not all beta-glucans are the same, I guess, is the important thing to understand. And the specificness about this 1-3-1-6 branching structure from fungi really allows it to have more connection points to your gut and then to your immune system. So we know that these beta-glucans can bypass through the large intestinal wall, which is really fun to think about. It's kind of like, you know, your body's really like, okay, yes, come on in here. You got something to give me. Not just go right through. And when it's then inside of our bodies, inside, not in this like digestive tract, when it's inside then into our body, it's really interacting with the immune system quite a lot. And so this is the compound in mushrooms that's been studied for, you know, 35, 40 plus years in the Western world, maybe thousands of years, you know, in the East. But these compounds are really immunomodulatory for our immune system. So that's like a really overused word in a way, adaptogenic, overused word. But what they're doing is they're sort of regulating and modulating our immune system. So if it's overactive, it's helping it calm down. So if you have autoimmune problems, you know, your body's attacking itself too much, it can help calm that down. And it can also do the opposite. So that's what we're seeing a lot from the literature review, indications of these things. And this is pretty well documented science now with over, you know, 1,000 papers around this point in vitro, this kind of idea. It's interacting with killer T cells, macrophages, I mean, pretty much everything that we know. And they've even found beta glucans from fungi in the tips of our fingers. So once they get into our body, they're really seeking out places of like long-term inflammation. They're helping to combat that. So, you know, it's an incredible, let's say, daily regime, you know? And I think when our bodies are, now many of us live in cities, we are in very clean environments. We're using a lot of cleaning products. This has a really effect on our immune system. So for instance, in Japan, if you're working in a laboratory environment where the air has been filtered to like, you know, 99.9% basically just atmosphere, there's very little particulate in these laboratory clean rooms. Also in our lab, we have these HEPA filters that are, you know, laminar flow hoods that are really blowing really clean air at you. That can actually, within 3 or 4 hours of being in that environment, can start to actually considerably see a diminish of your immune system. So in Japan, they have actually government regulated requirements. You cannot be there for that for too long. Because what happens if we're in a too clean space, if we have bleached everything, if we're not getting, not eating a little bit of dirt every day, you know, all this kind of stuff. What happens? Our immune system basically goes, well, I don't need to do anything. You know, I don't need, why give resources to a organ or a specialist part of our body that's not really needed. So one way to kind of check that is with adaptogenic mushrooms and beta glucans. It really keeps everything kind of working how it should. So for me, it's part of my daily regimen. And I think many people as well.
Yeah. That's an actually very important point that you said, that because we're emphasizing so much these days about the air quality and the harmful effects of, I don't know, toxins in the environment or pollution or whatever, but like nature, like, like we need a little bit of hormetic stressors, and we also need to immerse into the natural environments, like have that natural dirt to support our own immune system. So somehow then mushrooms can perhaps provide us this, if I understood correctly, provide us this like environment or the immunity benefits that nature would also provide us. Did I understand it right? Mm.
Yeah, and I think probably, you know, obviously, you know, we were at the biohacking retreat together with Seem Lamb in Estonia there. And Seem, of course, is like really into this right now. This is like his main focus is this. We have to have stress. We have to stress our bodies. We have to keep things active. That's how we build up. That's how we maintain, you know, consistency. So I think that it's becoming more popular. People are realizing that more. I think if you look back when I was a kid, 20 something years ago, 25 years ago, I remember going to my aunt's house and she would put these big gloves on, right? And she would do her dishes in like some seriously toxic, chemicals. And she would always have we kind of made a joke that she had a belt, you know, with a bleach bottle on it, you know, and it's like, oh, something spilled. She could clean that up. And I think that was really what we thought what we should do. You know, we're going to help improve our health through chemicals. We're going to help improve our health through making our environments really clean. And that's not the case at all. And now more and more, we're starting to realize that. I think, Inka, have you seen that study by Professor Aki out of University of Helsinki, where he took dirt from the forest and put it into the päiväkoti, the daycare systems here in Finland? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, yeah, this is like...
Tell us about it.
So this is maybe one of my favorite studies that's come out like in the last year or two, but I'll send you a link. But basically what he did is he was hypothesizing that the gut microbiome, of course, helps modulate our immune system, it helps modulate our health, and that being able to get a wider biodiversity of microbiome from the forest just is going to be good for these, you know, city kids, city, you know, children who are in these city päiväkodis, these daycare systems. So all he did was he went to the forest from Finland. He brought forest soil into that space and let them just play with it. You know, so of course they lick their hands. They get that, you know, comes through their skin, that whole thing. And they had a reduction of their sickness levels. They had an increase of their health from that. Just that, you know, that's it. And so now, you know, governments around the world are calling him and Finland says, how do we implement this? How do we get more dirt in our päiväkodis? And that is such a, amazingly different way to think about how we can help human health. Actually, it's like what you're talking about at the start of the podcast. It's more complex. Things are more complex. We have such weird interactions. We have such complex systems. Like, we grew up, we evolved to be living in dirt. We evolved to have that relationship with that gut microbiome. We evolved to have that dirt in us. We evolved to have that stress factors. And now we're trying, you know, trying to get that back in some way. So yeah, definitely medicinal mushrooms is a path for that. Definitely.
Great. Thanks for sharing the study as well. And now if you haven't yet gone out and brought a dirt to your room, any listener, go and do that. Bring some dirt to your room and play with it.
There was a startup company that started after that post was made, and they now make a kids Play-Doh. You know, like, kids can make little shapes and hearts and stuff, and it's Play-Doh that actually has the finished forest microbiome in it. So,
oh, nice.
I found that so funny. Yeah,
and actually I really like that you talk about the immunity benefits and the gut benefits. And one of the main interests of mine, of course, the connection between gut and the brain and how that modulates some brain benefits. So especially like reishi mushroom, I read some studies that it improved some of the brain factors, for example, sleep and stuff like that, or some things that would usually be related to only brain factors via modulating the gut and improving the gut, for example, serotonin production and all of those, like also peripheral neurotransmitters. So that was very cool. And actually wanted to discuss a little bit about the brain benefits of the mushroom, because many times we talk about mushrooms for immunity, mushrooms for gut, but there are also like great brain benefits, cognitive benefits, mental health benefits. One of my favorite mushrooms for sure that I've been using for years, maybe like since 2016 or something, is lion's mane. And I found that especially effective when I was at uni, I was studying. So I first got interested in it because it can improve like nerve growth factors and support memory. And I started using it, and I don't know, I just, it intuitively feels very good to use it. So can you talk about a little bit about, for example, the lion's mane and the research in that one?
Well, yeah. Wow. 2016, you were using lion's mane. So you are like, you're like the definition of an early adapter. But yeah, I think lion's mane it's probably our number one seller. No question. because I think that it has such promising research. It has such promising indications in research that are very exciting for us as a company. And I think very exciting for biohackers and pretty much anybody on the planet, to be honest. We talked about beta glucans, which is pretty much across all mushrooms. But like you mentioned, reishi, lion's mane, every mushroom also has what we call secondary metabolites. And these can be like in reishi, ganoderic acid, triterpene compounds. You know, in lion's mane specifically, we actually know the actives that are helping with the brain. So there's a really nice research institution out of Germany that we're working with on that. And there's also the professor in Japan who's been able to identify what these compounds are. So there's a lot of research right now being done on understanding this better. And I think, you know, companies are able now to have a bit more understanding of what is actually happening there. So this is a really interesting and kind of a new space, this lion's mane space. But effectively what we've understood is that there's two main groups of compounds. One's called arinacines and one called harisenones. And we also know that these are technically groups of compounds because there's arinacines A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. And we know that some of these compounds of arinacines can be mildly toxic. Some of them can be really helpful. So there's so much still research being done about this, you know. But, you know, these compounds, what we do know pretty certainly is that they are able to cross the blood-brain barrier, which, as you know, is a very exciting thing, as that doesn't happen very often. And scientists have been trying to increase in terms of, like, you know, brain health is increased NGF or nerve growth factor. And the problem with nerve growth factor is, like, you know, Inka, you and I can't just, like, we can't take a supplement of NGF. Well, you can take a supplement, but it doesn't work like that. NGF doesn't bypass the blood-brain barrier. So, you know, there are companies selling NGF supplements, but there's no evidence that it crosses the blood-brain barrier at all. So how do you stimulate NGF in the brain? And we know that over time, our brains start to produce less and less NGF. Okay, so we have this longevity issue, we have this aging issue, we know that it is NGF. How do we stimulate that, right? We can't take directly an NGF supplement. Maybe you could do like an NGF injection in your brain. Maybe Inka, you know more about that than me. But basically it's very difficult to get, NGF in your brain. So what lion's mane specifically is doing is these two compounds, aranesins and harisenones, are crossing the blood-brain barrier and activating NGF, stimulating NGF production. And in some clinicals, up to 8 times increase. So this is quite significant amount. And why does that matter? That's a great question. Why do we care about NGF? So NGF is doing very important things like stimulating neurogenesis, helping increase plasticity of the mind, decreasing amyloid beta plaque buildup, amyloid beta plaque buildup is effectively at some level of amyloid beta plaque buildup, you are diagnosed with dementia. It's like cancer. We all have cancer growing inside of us, right? But it's under control of our immune system. At some point, the cancer is out of control, and then we actually have cancer, right? And it's the same with dementia. At some point, the amyloid beta plaque buildup is so much that we have dementia. But any amount of amyloid beta plaque buildup is hurting our ability to remember things or learn new things. Or it's effectively why, you know, I haven't learned Finnish in 5.5 years, and my 6-year-old daughter figured it out in like 1.5 years, you know. That's exactly what's happening, is that as we age, the brain health, it just starts to diminish, you know? So being able to find a way to stimulate NGF is a really important protocol for brain health and for aging protocol. And we know that lion's mane is a significant contributor for that, as indicated by the clinical studies.
Yeah, that's a very good explanation. And especially for me, at least, it's also very interesting, like how can we actually use this possibly in the future for combating lifestyle mediated diseases such as Alzheimer's disease, which the burden is just increasing in this world. And we know that this amyloid beta buildup is like the main, and tau phosphorylation are like the main factors that contributes to the development of the disease. And actually I noticed a study as well. It was like I think it was a review study on the mechanisms of lion's mane, and also it decreased not only the amyloid beta buildup, so by actually increasing the clearance of it or the breakdown, but also it decreased or reduced the tau hyperphosphorylation. So tau can be like form these tangles that then start forming plaques that start slowly making the brain cells die. And especially like this lion's mane, it was hippocampus is very critical brain area for memory, for learning, for just basically everything, mood as well, because it's very rich in serotonergic neurons and receptors. So this lion's mane increased NGF, particularly in the hippocampus. So it's like, super interesting. Of course, the research is still like young, or like the specific mechanisms, but there is so much data already. And we know that like at least like there is a great potential, and this stuff should be researched more. And actually, talking about research, can you tell a little bit about the research that you do as well in Kappa?
Yeah, sure. I guess just one quick thing, because are many of your listeners from Europe or from US, do you know? But
probably both.
Mostly Europe. Both. Okay. Well, I think what's really interesting to know is that in Europe, we have a little bit of a problem when it comes to lion's mane, basically. So what we know with this aranesines and harisenone compounds is that aranesines are in the mycelium, the pure mycelium of the fungi lion's mane, and harisenones are in the fruiting body, right? And so what we want to have is basically a product that's containing both of those. I mean, independently, they're both also, you know, crossing the blood-brain barrier, activating, you know, NGF stimulation. So a fruiting body product is really still good there. But you'd really want to have a mix of both. And unfortunately, this lion's mane mycelium is not approved novel food in Europe, meaning it's not able to be sold. So, you know, I think that there's just across, you know, everything, like you said, there's more research that needed to be done. Absolutely. But there's also this regulatory hurdles that need to be really addressed as well. And we really need to our company really just needs to take the leadership here and get some of this stuff figured out, to be honest, is what I think, because it's really a shame that there would be a hurdle to this kind of medicine getting to people that need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What was your question again?
So maybe talk a little bit about, because you'd also do research.
Oh, the research. Kappa. Sure. Yeah. So we have a quite large mycological laboratory in Kappa, where we do original research on basically kind of how best to grow these mushrooms, right? So a lot of our focus has been on chaga mushroom and reishi mushroom specifically, because there's a lot to be gained with how those are grown. So how we grow chaga has actually what caused me to be nominated for this executive committee for the International Medicinal Mushroom Society. Because basically until now, the main source, well, it's still now, but basically the main source of chaga is wild forage chaga. A lot of it comes from Russia and Siberia. A lot of it comes from Lapland and Finland. So a little bit comes from Alaska. And basically when you're collecting something from the nature, you know, the compound levels could be really good in one batch, not so good in another batch. You know, it's very variable, right? It's not so controlled, let's say. So it's very difficult to make, you know, nutraceutical grade food supplements or products like that from that as a source. So, you know, when we started the company, we looked at that and said, okay, there's two main problems here. One, the strain that is being used is unreliable, right? It's totally wild. Its genetics are changing all the time. So just like you and me are both human beings, you look way different than I do, you know, thankfully. So, you know, the phenotype of the DNA can express itself in many different ways. So, you know, sometimes, like when we buy apples, sometimes they're really sweet and nice, sometimes they're sour, and we want to reliably have that characteristics when we buy an apple. We don't want to have a surprise when we go to the grocery store that tastes just horrible. No sugar, it's not nice. So same thing for chaga, you know. So what we did is we looked at some, we decided on a strain, a production strain of chaga, which we feel really good about, and we're actually putting that into living birch trees around Finland. And we are currently you know, managing the world's largest chaga cultivation network. So this is a really exciting thing for us, because it's kind of taken chaga to that next level. You know, every other medicinal mushroom, almost every other nutraceutical, you know, we're controlling a little bit how it grows, if it's not so much. And chaga is very interesting. You don't want to control it fully. You really want it to be there outdoors. It needs to have, it needs to be living on a living birch tree host, because chaga is not technically a mushroom. It's actually a canker, a sterile conch that is a reaction. It's part tree. It's 90% tree, actually. It's more birch tree than it is a chaga fungus, actually. But it's sort of an interaction between that birch tree and that fungus. It's a very interesting thing. And it's actually taking a lot of the interesting compounds from a birch tree. It's making those different forms that are bioavailable for us. So it's actually it's the highest antioxidant compounds gram for gram of anything that we found on the planet, anything that's been tested ever. And so it's a very interesting, you know, mushroom. And there's a lot of research and time that we've spent into how best to grow that mushroom. So the other problem that chaga has is that it's being over-harvested currently. So Finland is the only country in the world that is actively regulating and managing, ensuring that chaga is not over-harvested. So they don't have those standards in Estonia. They're not having those standards in Russia, Canada, Alaska, and the US. And what's happening in those places, I know more about Canada and the US, but they're, you know, it's kind of disappearing. It's not commercially harvested really in North America anymore, except in higher areas of Canada and then remote parts of Alaska, because it's been pushed so far deep into the woods. And so chaga, obviously it's one of our top sellers. The growth is only increasing massively each year. Medicinal mushrooms are growing massively each year. They're the second fastest growing nutraceutical category for the North American market. They're the fourth largest category by sales volume. So here we are. We got to come up with more chaga. So our company's also approach was, hey, let's also cultivate it in a very sustainable and renewable and regenerative way.
Because I mean, the nature needs these fungi to function. They use them. Yeah. So you sort of like solved the problem of maybe chaga is becoming like an endangered species or something like that. And you sort of take your responsibility and, hey, if we are going to take it away from the nature, we also are going to produce it. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I had the privilege of visiting your chaga cultivation plantation. And it was crazy. I remember we went to the tree and you were like, oh yeah, we have like injected the chaga. How do you call it?
Little plugs,
the blocks there to the tree, and I'm like, oh great, when can we get the mushroom? They're like, oh, in 12 years, 14 years.
Yeah, it's like a very good wine. It takes a lot of patience, but what we're seeing right now is that chagas are coming out about three, like we have small chagas that have developed after about 3 years. Within 1 or 2 years, you can already start to see the first formations of a chaga, but really the actual, you know, chagas are coming out about 3 years. But it takes a long time to grow. But I think
I don't think many people actually realize it when they take their daily chaga, for example, that it was like it grew 12 years before it got into the bottle.
I mean, to be honest, most of the chaga that we use in our production are even 20 years plus. You know, I mean, it's just, it's funny, you know, people ask how long mushrooms take to grow. And it's like, well, 6 weeks to 12 years. that's how long it takes. So I mean, it's really difficult to it's so complex, everything. Each species is entirely a different idea. But a lot of our research is really focused on we have Kappa Health division where we're selling our own product line for people to buy. We have a website, all that kind of stuff. And then we also have an ingredient division where we're helping other brands sourcing their medicinal mushroom products. So that they're getting ingredients from us. So for us, it's, you know, we want to specialize really just in production and in how to grow it and how best to make it that the highest level of compounds of interest are in the raw material, and then how to extract it and produce it in a way that it's most bioavailable. That's what our company's focusing. That's our bread and butter. So that's a lot where our research goes into. So, you know, another part of our, so that's on the product, the growing side. On the production side, you know, we were the first to bring ultrasonic assisted extraction to the ingredient space for medicinal mushrooms. So we know that in ancient Chinese literature, you know, traditional Chinese medicine, they're using alcohol as a chemical solvent, basically, to dissolve the cell wall to make it more bioavailable, which is great. We also use that in our Soma line of tinctures. And we also use ultrasonic assisted extraction. So that's also basically creating this kind of cavitation process of it's making a lot of micro explosions actually in the liquid, which is then also opening up those cells a bit more. So in combination with these different extraction methods, we can ensure like the highest bioavailability, you know, in the market. And that's what's important for us. But that project itself, it seems like a simple thing. I just talked about it. It took maybe a minute for me to explain that, but that was 6 months of R&D. Time of just doing literature review, understanding the best way to do the extraction for all these species. That was 6 months of R&D time. Then it was time to find the machinery. We had to custom make everything. So it's you know, everything is taking, it just takes a long time. It's a lot of focus. But I mean, that's what our job is. That's what we do here every day.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what keeps us moving somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And it's great. I mean, I really like the idea that you do the products, you do the research, you also grow them. So it's like the whole system, whole thing. And I also know that you have a great team. I've met several of your team, and all of you are just like lovely people as well. So I really what Kappa is doing, like holistically. I want to jump back a little bit about the benefits of certain mushrooms, and because one of the big issues at the moment in this society are sleep problems. And I've actually used reishi, particularly your reishi, in I think now for like half a year or something, almost every night. And I see some major effects on that reishi. So can you tell a little bit about mushrooms for sleep support?
Yeah. So I think reishi is probably the most popular. And I think that it's like I love, we were talking about Seemland before, and I love Seemland Because he always tells people, you gotta, what is it? You gotta drink water and get enough sleep. Everything else is optimizing. That is the basics, you know? And I love that, because we, as biohackers or as like health influencers or as health educators, you know, basically it's a lot about all of these complex things. Like, we just had a lot of complex talk, a lot of scientific names, a lot of very complex concepts. It's a lot to follow, but at the basics, drink enough water, get enough sleep, and you're going to be pretty okay. And then if you're ready to move to the next step. And so I think sleep is such a basic necessity. I mean, we have a mental health crisis on our hands, you know, in Finland, but also in the world right now, for many reasons, with the COVID and everything else that's happening. And, you know, sleep, like Outering has been talking about, sleep scores in general have been going down. You know, I mean, they can see that. They can visually represent that data, you know, of what's happening. And of course, I also wear this, like, you know, Outer Ring, so I can also be testing how my sleep is doing. And that's an important metric for my life, right? I can actually tell I'm having a bad day. I'm not thinking very, very clearly. I'm maybe a bit grumpier, right? Or I'm agitated more. And I look at, oh, my sleep score is really bad. Okay, yes, of course, I didn't get very good sleep last night.
Yeah, it's like insomnia is associated, or just like even one single night sleep deprivation is associated with so many like noticeable outcomes, both in mood and in learning. Actually, Matthew Walker and their team has shown that even one night sleep restriction can decrease the learning potential for 40%. It increases the amygdala hyperreactivity, so you're emotionally more agitated all the time. And we actually have this negativity bias after sleep restriction, which is that we just pay attention to more negative and threatful stimuli, which is like even single night.
That's so, I feel that so true.
You know? Yeah, I think we've all been there.
So I think Reishi is not like a cure-all for everything, right? I mean, it's important to understand how the mechanism works. And to the best of our understanding, the mechanism in which Reishi helps us sleep is that it's activating the parasympathetic nervous system. So the parasympathetic nervous system is the rest and digest part, right? So it's the, let's chill out, let's calm down, let's bring it right down. And that's why it can be helpful during the day. You know, if it's a Saturday morning, you wake up and it's been a very stressful week of work and you are just still just going through all the stuff and thinking about stuff. And you can also then take Reishi too. Also help yourself calm down, rest and digest, reduce that stress levels, you know. But going to sleep, it's a no-brainer. I think we all have like high stress levels right now with the state of the world. And it's really helpful to just, if your mind is really active, it's calming it down. it's letting you slide into sleep when your body needs it really bad. So it's not giving like melatonin. It's not a chemical stimulus to activate like sleep. It's not doing that. Mm-hmm. It's just you allowing your body to use its natural cycles, but just letting it, it's just kind of forcing it to calm down. You know, meditation, this kind of thing can also help in those situations. But to me, Reishi is an invaluable ally, you know, in my life for that.
I did look into, like, there was a recent paper about actually review of the mechanisms on Reishi and sleep, because I was also like, I need to know why it feels good and why does it actually help. And they had identified over 80 active components, mainly these triterpenoids and sterols that affect multiple receptors in the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system that can potentially be responsible of this sleep or like this hypnotic and sedative effects. There were these beta cytosterol that is mainly linked to lowered cholesterol and this like fat loss, and but it also had sedative and anxiolytic effects, and it also actually had adenosine, which is like, we know that controls the sleep-wake cycle as well. So it's like super interesting that it does have these compounds that affect those mechanisms both centrally and peripherally that controls the sleep-wake circadian rhythm and then the quality of the sleep within the sleeping hours, basically. So for example, one interesting effect was, I've heard so much of this, like, oh, Reishi improves REM sleep.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? Why would it increase REM sleep per se? So they found that it's like it activates their TNF-alpha, which is like actually pro-inflammatory thing, but it also increases the REM sleep. So like I guess in small doses, it can actually improve the sleep quality somehow. But what is very interesting and very cool in these kind of sleep aids, I would say, I mean, I'm a fan of like sleep supplements as well. So I also use like sometimes melatonin. I actually like using melatonin as well. Reishi, then maybe sometimes some zinc or something that it would improve the serotonin pathways, melatonin production.
Are you using magnesium as well?
Yeah, magnesium for sure. And then glycine as well for relaxation, these kind of things. But like current sleep drugs at the market that people like get prescribed on, like benzos or some sort of melatonin agonists or this orexin antagonists or something like that, they usually have just one active ingredient affecting one brain regulatory system. Usually on like GABA or melatonin. And these medicinal mushrooms, this review article are also talking about this, that it's good because they have so much different or so many different compounds and so many different mechanisms. They usually don't give any grogginess. Like I haven't noticed any grogginess in the morning. I wake up refreshed and good after having used, for example, Reishi and like no addictive potential or anything like that, at least not that we know of at the moment. So seems like very safe alternative to some of the pharmacological drugs that may have negative side effects for some.
Definitely. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I think, like you mentioned, I mean, ganoderma acid, we've identified like 130 different ganoderma acids, you know, triterpenes. I mean, these are really important compounds there for all these elements. And I think it's for us, it was really important to identify what are our customers taking Reishi for? What is the benefit that people are looking for there? And I think it's predominantly sleep. It's predominantly like this relaxing effect. And so how we grow Reishi is actually to enhance that, right? So we grow Reishi that maximizes the outside surface area of Reishi, which is the home for most of the ganoderma acid and triterpene profiles. So that's just, I mean, that's where we're thinking is like, how can we lean into that? How can we lean into that side of things? So that's maybe why you've had a lot of success with our Reishi that way, because we're really trying to grow it in a way that's, you know, what people want basically.
Yeah, exactly. And then one of the interesting benefits was also in Reishi was the effects on gut microbiome.
Mm.
So it was linked to some like production of specific gut flora and increase in this kind of bacteroids and firmicutes ratio and decrease of some of the harmful things like Helicobacter. So that also probably like could be one of the effects that it modulates sleep, because we know the gut microbiome, then the health of the gut microbiome is very essential to proper functioning of the vagus nerve. And
how close to sleep are you taking Reishi?
Maybe actually quite close to sleep. I would say maybe 15 minutes, half an hour before bed even.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about, I think a half an hour to an hour is kind of where I found that sweet spot. But yeah, it's interesting. I think it's interesting for our, I don't know what you say. What is better, a good night's sleep or not having amyloid beta plaque buildup? I mean, you know what I mean? If you sort of think about kind of the benefits of these different, both are better. but I think it's interesting, or like, for instance, antioxidant regime, high antioxidant regime from chaga. I think that Reishi is very interesting for people because you can track it. And that's, I just so love the more and more that we have these wearables and we have this, you know, test that we can do, because you can instantly go, okay, this is working for me. I've looked at the literature, I've looked at the research, I've heard these people say these things, but I can actually test it on myself. And that is such a powerful thing, I think, you know, to make that full circle just feel clear.
Yes, for sure. And it's also important for us to know what actually works for us. As you know, you also talk about biohacking, and you have the like a biohacking information in your webpage, and even a biohackers bundle for mushrooms. It's like the whole point of like this optimized health practices are that you know what your body needs, and you do something to improve it, and then you see if it actually worked. So, because you can do so much for your health. There is all the time new research and everything. So as you said, like the reishi is interesting in that sense that you can actually see improvements in sleep data. Yeah, for sure. And I feel it in the morning as well. Like it just feels good. So how would you like, what is actually the way to use the medicinal mushrooms? Like we have chaga, we have reishi, we have maitake, shiitake, everything. Like how, if one wants to start using medicinal mushrooms for health support, what's the best way to approach it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So how to actually use, so actually our company will be launching with Rohan Yuri. They're going to have their 40th, so that's a retail, kind of health food retail store here in Finland. And we're going to be launching kind of an exclusive product with them. So Kappa Health is going to start making powder. Yay. So we've had a lot of customer feedback that they would also like us to make a powder product. So yeah, we've been making powder product as an ingredient, but now we're going to have it on our own brand as well, which is really nice. So that will launch here soon. So in terms of how you take it, I mean, powder is pretty much soluble, like fully soluble. So you can mix it in, you know, morning coffee or evening tea, basically just totally dissolves, or even in water. Cold water is also fine. And with the liquid tinctures that we also sell, the Soma line, personally, I'm mainly blending those in my morning coffee, you know, with some of that. Fudin makes a really good coffee creamer that is like a not milk based. Has some it's a collagen.
Oh, the MCT collagen coffee creamer.
Yes. Yes, I love that. And then I'm adding more. Yes, it's so good. And then I'm adding more MCT oil and some ghee, and then all my mushrooms, basically, and a little bit of creatine powder. I think it helps my brain too. But yeah, I think that's kind of my morning coffee situation. And I'm always taking lion's mane and chaga every morning, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's why we put those in the biohacking kit. Because to me,
lion's mane for the brain benefits and chaga for, yep. What do you take it for?
Mainly I'm taking it. I mean, everything is immunity, right? So it's kind of like, you know, if you're taking them, like lion's mane, yes, it's good for your brain. It also has very high levels of beta glucans. You're also getting all those immunomodulatory effects as well. And so for, I don't really, I consider every mushroom immunity supporting. So that's just that. Mm. I'm always thinking about what that secondary benefit is, or primary, depending how you think of it. So lion's mane, yes, for mainly the brain benefit. Chaga, to me, it's, you know, a high antioxidant regime, is really important. You know, like Sinclair is always talking about this too. I think it's, you know, one mechanism in which our body ages, from what I understand, is that, you know, free radicals from stress, from alcohol, from frying, you know, low heat oil with high heat that burns. These free radicals are crazy, just smashing around in our body. And as they hit RNA or DNA, and that cell needs to sort of like rebirth, you know, it's having some problems doing that. So we get, you know, not so great skin, not so great hair as we age, but also eyes, mouth, liver, kidneys, heart, lungs, what, everything. So I think a high antioxidant regime to help neutralize those free radicals is a really important anti-aging, you know, regime. And I think chaga is just the best. It just has the highest amount of antioxidants and a very, very, very large range of different antioxidant compounds in it. So I consider that just crucial to my morning experience and my life. You know, I don't need to live till I'm 200, but I, you know, if I live till I'm 100 and, or even 90, and I'm just having a great time at the end, I'm really excited about that. So.
Yeah. And many times we emphasize that, you know, that it's not about trying to live as long as possible, but trying to live as healthy as possible.
Yeah. Right?
So to increase the health span. So to have just like just that gist and energy and the immunity for sure for the rest of the life, like that's the goal.
So chaga lion's mane every morning, and then I'm taking reishi some nights when I'm going to sleep. I'm not taking it every night. I actually sleep really well for whatever reason. but I'm taking it some nights, and then that's pretty much it, you know, for my mushroom intake. I know that I am taking shiitake. Like if my kids are sick, which like they're both in school, Paivakoti, daycare, this kind of thing. So if they come home and they're kind of sick, I'm taking a shiitake as well. Because I think shiitake is helping with the immune system, not only with beta glucans, but it also has a compound called L-ergothiarine, which actually was, the process in which that was taken out was patented by a company in California. And they're doing COVID clinical trials with that, because basically what L-ergothiarine does is it's a cytoprotectant. So when we go back to thinking about the, you know, mushrooms are more closely related to humans than they are to, we are to plants. Mushrooms and humans develop two different paths of our immune system. So humans have developed a much stronger cell-based immune system. So it's very difficult for viruses to come in, hijack it, and then replicate themselves and cause all the chaos, right? It's much more difficult than in mushrooms. But mushrooms have a chemical-based immune system. So they're having a lot of chemicals that are helping support their immune system from viruses and stuff that are attacking them. And so we have receptors and we can use those compounds. So L-ergothiorine from shiitake actually strengthens our cell walls. So if you first sign of basically there could be some sickness happening, you start to feel that little bit like dragging or brain fog, your body's achy, you're just starting to feel that like, okay, my immune, I'm getting attacked right now, this is going down, my body's telling me I need to rest a little bit more, everything else. I take shiitake a couple times a day, like 3-4 times a day, maybe 2 milliliters, 3-4 times a day. And then I just, doesn't happen. I also take vitamin C. I also take zinc. I mean, it's a part of a protocol for me, but it's a very important part of that protocol. And for me, that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm like the secondary benefits of like a turkey tail, maitake, just not a huge part of what I need right now in my life.
So basically know what you want to improve, and then find a mushroom for it.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. Well, this has been super informative, and I've learned so much new things about medicinal fungi, and will be very interested in seeing what Kappa Health does in the future, all the research, all the development of new products and everything. It's definitely going to be something to look in the future and pay attention to these fungi, and especially your company as well. And I would like to end this interview by asking you, like, in addition to medicinal fungi, what is your like number one health tip or health tool or health practice that you would emphasize?
For me in my life. So that's a good question. What I do, I mean, you know, I have, the company's growing quite fast. The company's growing quite fast. And some days I have a lot of stress, right, from that. So what I'm doing is I'm going home, and I have three kids at home. So I've got a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 15, 16-month-year-old. And I'm just playing with them. I just go home and I put my phone away. I'm not checking any WhatsApp messages. I'm not looking at any Instagram things. I really try to just separate that and give this space just for family, just for connecting with the kids, just for making good foods. You know, we light some candles every night. We turn off some really high bright lights. We just make a really cozy environment. And we have also wood heating at the house. So I make some wood fires, and, you know, just sometimes we make popcorn or whatever, but I'm really wrestling with the kids. I'm flowing with them. We're playing all these games, and I'm chasing them around the house, and I'm throwing my 16-month-year-old daughter in the air, and she's squealing and I'm laughing. And I mean, it's just 10 minutes of that, and I forget about everything. And it's just such a nice way to kind of help transition. And then when I'm at the work in the next morning, I'm waking up and I want to be here, right? I wake up and I'm excited to face the challenges of the day. I'm excited to take new things on. But I think it's really important that we have that transition. And for that reason, I guess I don't work at home. I work in the office. I want to keep those places sacred and separate. I want to have here, I want to be really focused and focused on work and getting things done. And at home, I want to do the opposite. So I think it's just, for me, it's that's it. Just enjoy life and don't get too caught up in to-do lists and you know, that's my health tip.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear what questions and ideas you got from today's episode, so leave a comment on YouTube and let me know about you. If you liked this episode, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. This also helps with podcast ranking and visibility. If you know someone who might benefit from listening to today's episode, consider sharing it with them and spreading health. Looking forward to having you around next time as well. Subscribe to get notified on the next episode. See you next time at the same place. Have a great rest of the week.